My job was to ball would come in near post. I'd come at the back for any pieces, and it worked a treat. I came in. Irwin came from the post into me, and McLare came from the outside. One hit me at higher, just above the middle of the shin, and one hit me just on the inside of my right ankle. It was the split second of both two forces. I don't know if you know anything about physics, but when you've got two opposing forces, and there is that split second where there's think something has to give. In the reserves at King's Heath, there was me and Willie Batchelor were the centre halves, Norman Batchelor was centre forward, and Keith Batchelor was left wing.
No one was messing with that side
Let
there
me
for
just
you,
say,
lad.
we never had it, and no one ever knocked us off the ball or anything like that. That was we were protected. And I'm rooming with Andy Pearce. He's in the team. We lose 1-0 at Carrow Road. Bobby Gould wants to set an example, jocks Piercy, but before he jocks Andy, he's already told me that I'm playing. I'm rooming with him, and I'm thinking, you know, what do I say? I just said to him, I said, look, and if the gaffer's told me I'm playing. The other one was Ian Wright. Now again, it's his non-league background, Enfield. He had an aggression in him. You know, he had a nasty side as well. You know, I just remember playing Highfield mode at the Highbury. First time slid in, come together, his ball's gone off there, he's turned around, whacked me, I've turned around, whacked him back. And then we just looked at each other and went, well, let's just play football now then.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So let's convert some views into memberships, and that'll continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.
So we'll get started then. I mean,
Yeah.
if you want to introduce yourself, then we can dig into it.
Yeah. My name is David Buist, former Coventry City football player. Started off in the Premier League when it first started, OG as they say. Currently, I'm the head of community for Sky Blues and Community, which is the foundation for the football club, a bit like Birmingham City Foundation. And yeah, my journey will be revealed.
Class. So, Birmingham born.
Birmingham born, yeah.
Yeah, what was it like growing up back then in Hayley Tiger?
I was Gibbs Hill Road, I lived in just behind the Man in the Moon pub. So, seeing where Wastills is now, and I think where Alf Church are playing, we used to go across the Redditch Road. 5, 6 year olds, they go and play in the Dell, but as it was known to us then, we go and spend the afternoon up there. But we weren't allowed to cross the road, so we'd have to scream down the road to whichever adult might be passing to just come and walk us across the Redditch Road.
That's a dicey road,
That
that
was,
isn't it, to be crossing.
I mean, it wasn't as busy as it is now
No,
these
of
days,
course, yeah.
but we just were told you cannot cross that road on your own, and we did. So, you know, classic jumpers for goalposts. You know, I remember one of my brother's tops being picked up by a car and on the undercarriage, as they call it, and off down the road. Mum comes out with a skull, you know, look after your stuff and all that. Like so, and we lived in a little in a cul-de-sac then as well, and still got some good friends from that. We
You
went
mentioned
back to
Triple X
Irwin.
earlier. Well, you
Yeah,
know, that's
so
sort
went
of going on,
at
isn't it?
Tuva.
Yeah.
But moved when I was 7, 8 years old, to Solihull Lodge, and then was schooled in around Shirley, and then yeah, sort of I got into football from just naturally, like everyone else does.
Football obsessed.
I didn't want to go and watch football. I wanted to play it. My dad was a massive Villa fan, probably not the best shot. He was a steward in that when the North Stand was built. My brother's a big Villa fan. They were all out in Turkey the other week watching that. So the one year he bought both me and my brother a season ticket, and because he was a steward, we had to be there 3 hours before. I hated it. Meant I had to sit on the whole end, just didn't enjoy it, and then just said, look, I don't want to go. But I did like football kits, so the Villa away kit was really nice. I did
What was that
have.
one, eh?
It was the white one with the King Stripe,
Yeah.
the claret thing. Never had the blues one though. Don't know why. The penguin one with
Yeah, well,
the
market sort of been nice. Paint,
yeah.
splashes.
Yeah, so But in answer to the question, I'd rather be, you know, playing around that there's, when I lived in Solihull Lodge, there was some garages around the back. We used to use the wall part of the garage as a goal, headers and volleys, and there was a little green in front of masonettes and things like that. So just go and play football with whoever was about. And there's a real good girl that used to play with us, and she was absolute quality. She's about 3 or 4 years older than me. And you know, Denise Reed, she was brilliant, you know, and that she was just mucking and that was a talent, could play.
So mostly that's lost a little bit these days, isn't it, with how life is and community like that, where it's the same, I need to tag a ball out and you just find a game of football, wouldn't you, on a patch of grass on your lot.
It was because you just go do it. We used to always go across to Daisy Farm. I didn't think, oh well, you know, Birmingham from our side of it, we used to always go around Maypole, Daisy Farm Park, just down the road. We'd just go there with five or six maids, and then we'd find five or six lads off the estate around there, and they always had loads of football pitches. And you just go and, you know, randomly go, and get a game, and
go out in the morning, come back on the night, wouldn't you? Older.
And even be like, you know, I'd be 9, 10 then, and we're playing against 15, 16 year olds, and well, then they just go on with it. You didn't worry about this, you know, health and safety, or someone going, you can't play with them if they're two years older, they might injure you. Just get instruction.
So grassroots football then. So it was just going back on a point though. So I always sometimes think, you know, if you're football mad and you go to the football, does that climb the mind of people who play on a Saturday? They go, oh the Blues are white or whatever, or Villa are playing. It's just a thought that come across. So obviously when you were playing on the Saturdays then, you weren't overly fussed about.
It's like, I know the big match and star soccer. I'd rather be in the garden kicking a ball against the fence. I always watch highlights. Even now, probably only the last couple of years, I watched a bit more football. It was match of the day, and you know what? I flick through whoever's commentating on it, because I just don't want to listen to that in between it. I just want to watch it, see the goals or the depending or whatever it is, and you know, cut over crap.
That's what I used to do about a couple of years ago. Just record it on the night and watch over Sunday, and then just fast forward the bits of 20. And you're like,
that's where the World Cup clips are good now, aren't they? And like, they have to literally four or 5 minutes off just to highlight, and boom, it's done.
Yeah.
You haven't got to hear same people's opinions 15th time that day on. It's a little bit funny, it's a little bit oversaturated, eh? Do you know, with everyone's opinion, with the internet and everything, it's just...
I just find it a little bit boring. Listen to it, if I'm honest. It's, you know, they're not saying anything insightful or anything. And, you know, you look at the different crews. Some of them are very good. I love Roy Keane, you know, when he's on there, and his interaction with Jill, is it? Jill? Yeah. Jill Scott?
Yeah,
Scott. And Gary Neville, I love that. The relationship that they've got. But you're looking for that entertainment, man. It's a lot other than the knowledge of football. Yeah. You want to see them, you know, having the crack. Like,
it's always got to be something else sensational as well, hasn't it? It's always got to be like, the last thing was like Keane on McGinn one. It's he's a pub player.
Yeah.
Out of context, what he actually said. And then he's got to come out then do another interview. And go, no, I didn't say it's just talking.
We heard the interview, then he's come out and say it. Isn't he? How did you get... So what was your journey then? When did you get spotted?
First team was, my brother was a year above, but 18 months older than me. So he played for, he was in the Cubs. So they're just outside Dick and Teeth now. They're still there, the same place. So I used to go along with him, and they had an under-10s team, and I used to just train with them and play with them. And then he had another team, Peterborough United, because we went to Peterborough School. You know, school football didn't take off till the under-11s, year six now, and then changes. So you didn't get to play, but I was always sort of playing, you know, with my brothers, because that's, you know, always played with that sort of age group. I was at least a year up, and that sort of helped me, took me through all my school life. I always played for the year up, as well as my own, you know, And I wasn't big. In fact, I was really small. I had a massive growth spurt between 15 and 18, but it was a little, you know, dumpy little winger that, you know, at school. So
definitely helps, though, doesn't it? Playing up. And
yeah.
I've got the opportunity to play up with older kids, older family.
I think you go, for me, it's about the relationship that you form. So and you're inspired by teachers, and you probably don't get that so much now. And that might mean me just being a bit old, fuddy-duddy, going like that. But I had three of the best sports teachers at Lytle School in Shirley. Mike Inks, Miri Kleski, and then there was the Miss Crawley, who then married one of them. And they were Wolves fans. And I was a Leeds fan as a kid. Used to love Alan Clark, the number 8 shirt. So they would always take me to Wolves Leeds. You know, he'd have a bag of sweets and things like that. You wouldn't have to do that, safeguarded and all that.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I used to go and, all the after school stuff, whether it was basketball, football, or the rugby, they really wanted me to get involved. And then when the district teams, they ran the district teams as well. So they were really, in sort of inspiring and getting me to get in. Yeah. And it's, sadly, the two of them aren't with us anymore. And, but you look for that influences when you're going through school, people that want to inspire you. And everyone wanted to be a PE teacher, that was mine. But my football, so that was school football. Sunday sides was played for a team called Hall Green St. Michael's. Again, it's like a grassroots club. It's the kids round you. Someone forms a team. The dad's running. And we played Peterbrook School because they had a nice little pitch at the back there. And then I suppose it came into sort of being poached at a young age. I've always been under 12s playing for a team called Bailey's Colts. And they were over... Where's the Peru Bar? Just past Peru Bar, you see it. Kingstown. Yeah. Just played Burford Road, Kingstown. Yeah. Oh,
I was going to say, you got a rhyme in. You seem coming from Peterbrook School to Kingstown.
And I didn't. Then we used to go right across on the bus for that. So when we played, we lost every game at Hall Green St. Michael's. And then we played Bailey's Colts, and they absolutely battered us. But they took three of our players the next season. There was me, the centre forward, and they were twins. So we used to go with his mum from Solihull Lodge, 24 into town, bus out of town to train and to the games. And it was, you just think, God, he's, I wouldn't do that now. Sort of buses to town and out of it. And that's where it sort of came into playing a higher level. So we won everything with Bayes Colts, and then there was a team called Dunlop Terriers, who were a feeder club. You weren't allowed to, it was all schoolboys forms, and you couldn't go until you were under 14. So under 13s, Dunlop Terriers were playing in an Aston Villa kit, go around in an Aston Villa minibus. We had players from all over the Midlands, and inevitably 9 of those got taken on at 16, but not by Villa. Then I went to Leicester because the coach, scout at the time, he sort of left off Villa and went there. So that was interesting. 9 of that team that were all, and I was one of the ones that won. So I'm bleak.
What happened then? What when you see the majority of the lads go and you don't?
I just saw, I started playing for Albury United at a youth team. So at 16, again, but it was miles away, but my dad used to
say, are you going further away?
My dad used to take me everywhere. He was really into his football. He worked for Britannia Insurance. They had the best sporting, underfloor heating, back in the 70s. They'd have table tennis, sneaker rooms. There was, you could go and put in, he'd do tennis. Honestly, that's the best big insurance company. And the surface at down in Moseley was absolutely superb. So Saturday, Sundays, either football or cricket, depending on the season, me and my brother packing up the, cricket bats and the footballs. And we just spent the whole weekend, football-wise. But going on from 60, again, I was a late developer. Body hadn't grown, I was a little bit immature, probably. And went and worked for the Titanic Insurance, playing in their works team, their second team. I always remember playing a team called St. Andrews, in the World League Division 7-8, and it's probably the one thing that made me fall, if I'm honest, because the physical side of it was getting battered and pushed around by grown men in the World League. You can imagine the sort of
you're still on the wing then, we still playing on the wing then.
I'd moved to fullback, so as I from about 14 I started moving further back. I went from left and right wing, centre midfield, to then left and right back because of my size.
So are you both footed?
No, I'm totally right footed. I can swing it, be a left foot, but it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's even in any way. So naturally went back to defensive positions, and then I just moved into the middle then as a sweeper. Still very small at 16, 17, but as I said, I had a big growth spurt between 16 and 18.
Nippy though.
I was sort of still growing into, you know, like I say, it must be about a foot I would have grown from, you know, went up to 6 foot, 6'2" when I was 19, probably I was about a foot, because 2 foot's a bit hippie. Yeah. So that's where I was playing worked football. I was sort of, you know, a little bit gangly. I was, you know, just coming into it. Then I went to King's Heath, 18. My dad took me, said, you need to get away from Works football now, go and play that. Again, went to King's Heath. Every club I've been to, I've always gone down to whatever their lowest team was. So King's Heath had a reserves playing in the Midland Cup, whenever that was. And then grew into the team, went into the first team and used to, in the reserves at Blues, reserves at King's Heath, there was me and Willie Batchelor were centre-halves, Norman Batchelor was centre-forward, and Keith Batchelor was left-wing.
No one was messing with that side.
Let me just say, we never had it. No one ever knocked us off the ball or anything like that. We were protected. But no, them three could play football as well. Yeah. I mean,
the opposition turning up, having a lot of good.
You love them, yeah.
But, you know, Norman, just a handful, you know, that physical side. William was a good centre-half, and the two of us, he was a lot taller than me, but we were both very quick. We'd sort of caught up there. Went into the first team. Played Moore Green in a Birmingham Senior Cup, drew 0-0 at their place, lost 1-0 at ours, and then Bob Faulkner put 7 days in for me. Didn't want to go, playing with my mates. My dad was on holiday, so he didn't know, and then didn't decide. Derek Allen, who was the goalkeeper at the time, he played for Wychall on the Sunday. He kept saying, he told me, old man, basically, he said, I thought he's supposed to come down and sign, and he didn't.
Oh, great job.
Yeah. So as soon as he, I always remember it, Friday night before the season started, Dad had been on holiday for 2 weeks where I was supposed to go down and sign. He picks me up, takes me down there and to Moore Green and sign.
He will sign.
You know, and it's a bit, you need that, because it was like, I get it when people say, oh yeah, I'm playing with all my mates, we're having a great crack, but you know, some people can see the bigger side of it.
From the outside, yeah.
You know, and you know, not going to lie, it was, I was on £5 a week, £10 if we won at King's Heath, whereas Bob really pushed the boat out and put me up to £20 with a £5 win bonus at Moore Green.
Yeah.
And then spent 4 years there, and again, wasn't first choice, and sort of grew into it, got stronger, and then the last 2 years of the 4 years, people started asking me for trials. I remember going to Warsaw, going there at John Barnwell, spent 2 weeks, scored, trained them for 2 weeks, scored in a reserve game, and then it was, no, played alongside Dean Smith, which was just seeing later in life and what he went on to as well. Then I always remember him as a youngster. But yeah, it was just opportunities. There was Coventry came into me, and they were the first to actually, you know, make an offer after I'd been in for a.
Did they not have a sniff?
Blues were there, because Ian Atkins, because me and Ian Taylor were both playing for Moore Green at the time, and we had another player called Stuart Talbot, and all three of us went pros within like 12 months. So at the time, I remember, you know, Ian Atkins tells me a story now, whoever was owning this place then, they went, look, go and get these two, won't cost you anything, they'll be a friendly and stuff like that, and nothing happened. I went to Coventry. Terry Butcher was managing. I was about being in the right place at the right time, and a little bit of luck, because Terry was a centre-half and probably saw something in me that, you know, he could relate to as an Amelia's as a centre-half. Coventry at the time had also signed a lot of non-league players as well. You know, Sean Flynn was at Hells Owing. Andy Pearce, centre-half, was at Hells Owing. So they had, you know, they had good kick, didn't have a lot of money, good connections. And, yeah, so just before I was going to sign, Christmas, handed in my notice at the insurance company I was with, and then Terry Butcher sat. Right, again, no mobile phones back then. And there's speaking to the scout, a guy called John Bettles, and he was brilliant. Again, sadly not with us anymore. I said, what's going on? He goes, is he with me? I'll go down. And luckily for me, Don Howard had come in with Terry Butcher, and he'd knew that they'd put a deal together. And fair play to him, he honoured the deal. Went up with my dad. They were only offering me a year and a half. Less money than I was getting playing for a Moore Green and doing my job. So my dad got another year out of them, so signed a 2.5-year deal. Bonuses, appearance money, and took me over it, but the basic wage was still less than what I was getting. But I was 24 years old. That was my last chance to go and
get that. I was going to say, to get that shout at 24.
Yeah, just never would have thought it. And then took me 12 months before I made my debut, which then turned into the 92-93 season of the Premier League. Bobby Gould again, he'd come in as manager. But I couldn't get near the first two.
Who were you emulating then, or were you trying to unsurp? And
I'm trying to think who was in front of me. There was a good professional, Peter Atherton, who was centre half, went on to Sheffield Wednesday. He was smaller than me, but it's like very quick, very strong, had a good spring in it. He was good. Bobby Gorder converted Phil Babb from left back to centre half. Andy Pearce was in that position as well.
What was Bobby Gorder like? As a manager, I know he's a bit of a kind of showman as a.
Yeah, no, he's like that. He's very much a this is the way we're going to play. You either fit into it or you won't be playing, out of the Highmark. And I always remember them grabbing the corners at Highfield Road, the grass. And Brian Burrows, he was an out-and-out footballer. He was just told, just all you got to do is stick that ball into that channel there. The longer grass will slow it up, and they've got John Williams, the flying postman. Another pill on me. He'll get on the end of it. That's all I'm waiting for. If you don't do it, I'll find someone who can. So he had a way of playing, probably a little bit of the Wimbledon stuff swimming into it.
Get into the long grass.
Yeah. And that's what we did when we were very fit. The one thing I did get is my fitness, because it's I wasn't unfit, but when you go into training every day and even weight wise, I probably lost at least a stone from when I first went there, just with that. But yeah, so weirdly, I was me and Andy Pearce, we're obviously good mates. All the non-league boys stick together, and half our team were non-league as well. So we went down to Norwich in doubleheader of the FA Cup, the play on a Wednesday, and then we were playing Norwich at home on the following Saturday. And I'm rooming with Andy Pearce. He's in the team. We lose 1-0 at Carrow Road. Bobby Gould wants to set the example. Jocks Pearce, but before he jocks Andy, he's already told me that I'm playing. I'm rooming with him, and I'm thinking, what do I say? I just said to him, I said, look, and if the gaffer's told me I'm playing, and he goes, I thought he might do. And I think at the time he was just doing it to give him, a kick up the backside. You've got a kickstand. So I made my debut, which was 1-1. Ricky Quinn scored a goal. Played 12 times from January to the end of the season then, but was in and out on the subs bench. Andy was back in. And then I didn't get in the team in the next season for a whole year. Bobby got the sack after 4 or 5 months of the season. Kill Neil came in, and I was nowhere near that team.
That previous season, was that the season that Mickey Quinn got a trick on the first day?
Yeah.
I've seen the goals recently. Yeah. He's so unorthodox about it.
That's where they do their celebration with John Williams. Yeah. I don't know what they're trying to do. It's like a running man on the pitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, so... Again, I didn't. Moore Green had played as part of the deal, because there was no money involved in the assignment. It was a friendly, and we played against Moore Green, and I played right back. He'd moved me to right back, and I had a stinker, Dave Fearing, who's a very good, the whole league player. Played for Wichel, over 35s. He sort of gave a game with the run around, and then, Bob had told me afterwards, he said, no, I couldn't start after that. And then he put another Birmingham lad, Terry Fleming, and he started. So I missed. That was my opportunity. Yeah. But I wasn't ready then. what I was at Reddit.
Yeah.
And at that point, did you have an established position? Was it right back, or were you just still getting moved around?
I was a centre half then. It was just that because I was quite quick, I could go out there and play right back, play left back, you know, if the options came along. And but centre half was my position. Left sided, even though I'm like most people wanted to.
And it's funny you should say about being a Leeds fan, because you were kind of a no-nonsense centre half. Do you think that was kind of watching that team of the Leeds in the 70s have kind of rubbed off you a bit, because you didn't stand for no crap, did you?
I used to watch, the centre half then was the Greenoffs, two brothers, yeah. Went to him. So they were sort of like that. Maybe had an effect. But I think just the way I play any football is fair. Go win the tackle.
Yeah.
You know, if I get kicked, I'll stick my head in where I shouldn't do. Probably sometimes I was brave. I was a member of Ron Atkinson, and we just had a training session where the rest of the lads would just blast balls, and they weren't told to shoot. They weren't told to score. He wanted them to hit the wall, and he was finding out which one of us was ducking out the way. And honestly, we were there, and all we could do was look real like that, because we didn't want it in the head and the throat, and he didn't want it in your nuts.
Yeah.
And I was just remembering the cell, and it was going to come bang, bang, shoulders in the legs. It was
like dodgeball.
Yeah.
Throw spanners at
you. Any point we thought, can we go for goal? No.
Yeah. Yeah. That was it on the match day, hitting Lowe's head and everything. Yeah. But he's trying to find it. We talk about characters. He's trying to find who's going to stand up in the trenches, as they say, who's going to, you know, there's when the pitches are awful or where, you know, one of the who's going to fight from. He was trying to find those characters. So I got the method behind the madness.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What's Highfield Road like then? It was absolutely bouncing.
Well, I always thought it was absolutely, the picture was absolutely fantastic. But when I look back on pictures, you see there's hardly any grass on there.
Yeah.
But the crowd was so close. That's what I used to love about Highfield Road. And obviously I played all my games there. It's that, you know, you see the fans just walking up into the road. It's a bit like Blues, you know, where they are currently. You know, on that match, and I've walked up to a lot of first team games not playing as well. So you're walking in amongst the fans. So coming from all over, just, you know, you can get the train to car for traveling, just walk up the road. And but it was a real close to the pitch. Not like the CBS now where it's...
We're seeing sort of lost in now, don't we? It's kind of further and further away. And I think that has an effect on the atmosphere, doesn't it?
Yeah. But it was my first professional club, so it's, you know, my only club.
Yeah.
So it's got fond memories of me, and obviously I worked there after my injury as well. So
I feel like some teams might have turned up and underestimated Carf as a team, because it was quite for that small knit and where you are and stuff. There's the fact that there was a family connection for the team as well.
Yeah, I think they talked about the original teams that were in the Premier League when it started, and obviously Cobweb before they got relegated. And like you say, it was every year, it was the same. When I first went there, last game of the season, I think Luton went down because they lost. Otherwise, we didn't win our last game. I mean, we would have done, so we would have been at, you know, Division 1 table, Championship, which they went to the new format. You know, and I think I was watching my dad's team at Highgate on that day. I wasn't at the, you know, what's it? Because it was only 3 or 4 months from when I'd signed. It was a little bit disengaged from it. But it's a big country. I've always been down that bottom. Even when sort of in the couple of good years where I played quite a few games, we were always on that edge, you know. It was about character, because and the non-league thing. I call it the non-league factor. We, Blackburn had just won the Premier League. We played them, Shearer and all them lot. We played them at Highfield Road just around Christmas time. Pitch was a little bit frozen. Orange ball, probably shouldn't have played. They just didn't fancy it. We were, you know, got in there. We just snotted away and beating 5-0, I think it was. I scored one of the goals. You know, there's my fault. Well, Alan Shearer didn't score. I scored. But you just, that's what we were. We'd go and slide in on an icy pitch. We'd go, that's what we had, you know. I always use a thing that no matter who's your talented players, you can all run round, you can all pick up, you can all track back. It's just because you might happen to be the best or the quickest forward, doesn't mean you can't do the base hit. And if enough players had that sort of, that equality, I suppose, it's your game changers in those little moments where they are on the pitch and that. That's when you want them to go and do their little bits and that. But everyone can run around, everyone can trap back. And that's where I see football change now, because forwards don't, I keep saying forwards like I'm blaming that. I'm not. Yeah. No, you just wanted a mid-queen, just score goals, that's it.
Yeah.
No, you look at football, it's their movement, how do they fit into the team? How are they tracking back? How are they forcing the play? Mm. And that's a big part of football now, the way it's changed. And that sort of backs up, mate. We're all entitled to, we should all be running around picking people, working hard, smart, but not stupidly headless chicken sort of thing.
Yeah.
So. It mentioned Shearer there. We've had this discussion before about with defenders, like with Jody Barney. Who are the forwards that would be a little bit naughty? Who are the cute ones? They'd leave a bit on you, the pinch, the little nicks here and there.
Yeah,
the elbows off the ball.
It was the crazy gang were in full force around them. So John Fashanu up and played against him for Villa as well. So that's when he got that move. So I played against both of them. So they wanted to intimidate. And again, it's about testing characters, and it's, a lot of it's before. But you have players that will go under, they will shrink away from it. And I think my non-league upbringing just, we just match them, because if you don't, they've got you. They're inside your head. They're then pulling you about everywhere like that. The other one was Ian Wright. Now, again, it's his non-league background, Enfield. He had an aggression in him. He had a nasty side as well. I just remember playing Highfield mode at the Highbury. First time, slid in, come together. His ball's gone off there. He's turned around, whacked me. I've turned around, whacked him back. And then we just looked at each other and went, well, let's just play football now then, because... But had I sort of wilted away a little bit,
he could bully it.
He would have just, ragdolled me again. And I think it's just about, standing up for yourself and
let's see each other.
Not being intimidated. It's like a respect thing. Well, that's not going to work today.
Works against something.
And he was playing up front with Ian, with Dennis Bergkamp. So, and we drew 0-0 that day as well. So it was a good result for me.
So when people obviously bring up your career, they often go to Old Trafford. Is it difficult? Have you made peace with it?
It was difficult. Still talking about it today, which is, I'll show the positives of that. Man United was quite a good place for me. One of the trial games I had with Terry Butcher, with our reserve, we went and played Man United's reserves. They had 9 internationals in their reserve team. Lee Sharp was making his comeback after he'd done his knee. There was like 15,000 people for the reserve game. It was like, yes, you're walking out at Old Trafford. And again, we drew 1-1. Sean Flint scored penalty for us. And we had a real good, and it's probably what made that decision with Terry, because of the way we'd sort of all played on that day. But in particular, he was looking at me. And I want to think I played against Dion and Mark Robbins at that time. I'd have to check the team sheets, but I'm pretty sure them two were in the team then. So Man United was a good place for me. As I was just talking to you earlier about, you look at where Coventry were. So in that 95-96 season in the April, it's Easter weekend. So it's Bank Holiday Monday when I got injured at Old Trafford. And then on the Saturday, we beat Liverpool 1-0 at home. Now, if we were going into that and needing the 6 points to just keep us, clear of the relegation, we were sort of teething on the top. So to beat Liverpool at home that day, so we went into then the Bank Holiday on the 8th of April and named an unchanged team. And again, back to Old Trafford, you see, as you come down the tunnel side from the other side of one of the goals, your fans, only 4,000 of them, are in the diagonally opposite corner over there. Have all 1 point. Who's that? Yoji.
Toilets.
So you just beeline for them, because I think it was 60,000 seats at the time, for our little cohorts in that corner. So you just go wall there just because you can hear them and nobody else. And so it was quite not intimidating, but just like, wow. I mean, it's got Theatre of Dreams, you know, in the same amount. You just look him out and go, yeah,
this that was very cold trough as well, wasn't it? Yeah, before it started falling down and leaking and falling to disrepair. Yeah.
So it's and then we looked at their team sheet, and then you know all the stars were about. Then you see Eric Cantona playing up front. Yeah, and in Leipzig, you think, oh, this is what came into football. No disrespect to all the other teams we played before, but when you're going there and it's, you know, we're on the back of the Liverpool victory.
Yeah, you guys, you're feeling fluffed, and you feel like,
yeah,
a bit resolved.
Yeah. We had a corner after a minute, so I've literally just stood next to Eric Cantona while it's gone down that end and got a corner. So this is, I think it's 87 seconds when I got injured. So wings have come right on the, perhaps a long ball into one of the wingers to slow it up. So then we've gone out at a set piece, and then my job was to, ball would come in near post, I'd come at the back for any pieces, and it worked a treat. I came in, Irwin came from the post into me, and McClare came from the outside. One hit me at higher, just above the middle of the shin, and one hit me just on the inside of my right ankle. It was the split second of both two forces. I don't know if you know anything about physics, but when you've got two opposing forces, and there is that split second where there's think something has to give, and my shin was L shape on the floor.
Still watch it. I still remember it back in the day, but still watch it now. It's still painful to watch.
Yeah,
Did you feel it instantly?
I just remember something was missing. It wasn't in the right place. And I always remember seeing Dion Dublin on his sort of in the squat position, his haunches with like a like that. And then when they're calling for the doctors to come on, you know it's not there. And then I think it just I don't think what's the word. You freeze, you know, adrenaline sort of kicks in. You don't, you know, just don't move, move either where I am. Yeah, shock. Yeah, that's the word that some people. The shock comes into it. The worst thing is about it, but Old Trafford's got the biggest speed or bumps in the world. So they get you through a side all the way along the edge, stick you in the back of the ambulance. And it's great because the ambulance reverses basically onto where the corner thing is. It's that's good. But then getting out of Old Trafford, there must be 20 of the biggest fish. So either by. It was like no gas and air at that stage. Still got me boots on, still got me sock on, still got me shin pad. They come down to me because we'd had 3 hours before kickoff, we'd had pre-match. They go, no, they can't put you out. I said, no. I said, just put me out. I said, oh, sign whatever, waiver. And yeah, so they obviously fixed it for the time being, just straightened it and calibration deal on it to keep it in line, because obviously I didn't know at that stage the
did you have a look at
damage? You just freeze, and like,
yeah, was from heaven, like you say, you're seeing everyone else are actually
they're giving you the drugs, then, and you just think that. But I always remember one of the porters in the hospital. So just before I was going off, they're sticking the morphine into you to send you off before they do the operation. He comes running down the thing, going, yeah. Like that. He goes, oh, United have just scored, we lost
more. No.
Yeah.
So right. Just as you're horrible.
Tears for that, mate. And then next day I'm waking up. I've woke up, I saw my dad. My dad, obviously, if my dad and my brother had travelled to the game, he stayed over. And I looked in the morning as I woke up, I went, looked at him, I went, you all right? You know, it was that drained and obviously worried and everything, and I didn't know what had gone on at that stage, but I just looked at him, you don't look too good, what's up? Yeah, sure. You know, and you're obviously worried about what's
up with you. You're peacefully liar. Blissfully unaware.
It was a complication. It wasn't the actual lead break that stopped me playing football again. It was the soft tissue damage. I got an infection, of course, MI first in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had 10 operations in the first 12 days, and they were just clearing, trying to get the infection out and tie it up. And I did reset. I needed an orthopedic surgeon. I needed a plastic surgeon.
10 in 12 days? So yeah. Just opening your beach day, yeah. Going again?
I didn't know it, yo.
Oh, yes.
It didn't. So basically, I had a hematoma. You've got a muscle going down. I'll use my arm. You've got a muscle down there, so there's one in your leg as well. And when you get a dead leg, you've both had dead legs, haven't you? That's what happens. It sort of explodes and all the swelling jumps to it. So what they had to do was to release the pressure. They had to slit it down. So if you've seen me when we've been playing football against each other, down the outside of my right leg, there's a scar going from just below the knee to the ankle where they slit down to release the pressure. That's when the infection was allowed to get in there, and obviously from where the break was. So it was, they had many, many chances to get in.
Because your body's constantly trying to fix it itself, isn't it?
It's and trying to complicate everything. Everything gets thrown, so wherever the trauma is. So I was 6 weeks. I was up in Manchester. Ended up over the course of time having 24 operations. I probably sort of knew after about 3 months that I probably wouldn't play again. I remember them doing, I had to have a back slab on my foot because I couldn't pull my foot up. And I thought, well, if I can't pull my foot up, I can play football. But you wait because you're hoping.
I was going to say, is that the whole time you're in there? You're just like, we'll get through it.
Most, I would imagine all footballers any footballers that do professionally, where you do, well, your livelihood's on the line as well. You have to have a mental toughness, a resilience, a belief, you know, and that sort of thing. And that's sort of epitomised me. It was always half full, not half empty.
Yeah, that's the next question, mentally then.
So how hard is it for you then? So you're trying to recover from this. You're trying to deal with the actual physical and mental trauma of the injury. But you became like the poster boy, didn't you, for horror injuries for a time. Everything was your injury, wasn't it? Everyone. So what was that like with people wanting to, well, you get being inundated with, did press want to get to you?
That's talk about positive and negative. That was the positive side of it. I'd played in the reserves 2 weeks before. That's a Bury, a Giglay. I could have broke my leg that day and nobody would ever know. And it's not about being known. It's about being, it's a talking point even now. Yeah, people will come up to me and go, oh, I was at Old Trafford that day. I was up there. I tell you what, it must have been, I don't know, 30,000 Sky Blue fans in there. Because they were all that day. And I know there was only 4,000 tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's a talking point. So when I went to do my coaching and stuff afterwards, I was going into the schools, people. And as it's a generational thing. So over the years, it's now started off as, oh, you know, my dad remembers you as a player, knows my granddad, now it's my great-great-granddad as I'm getting older. But it's a conversation opener. You know, I can relate to when I go into, you know, some of the schools or something like that. They won't know who I am or anything, but the teachers will either go, oh, you know, put YouTube this and that, and then you go, oh God, and then there's like a connection there.
So do you not mind that then? Because obviously the photo is still quite grisly, isn't it? Seeing it like that, and do you not mind then that people want to, still getting kind of flashy legs.
I wish I'd had the image rights for it. That would have been a good one. But no, it went everywhere. And it will still resurrect itself. And, you know, with people are always asking to do something. But my story doesn't change. So I sort of feel like I've covered it quite a few times. And I don't want to ever get to that stage where there's, you know, the old, oh God, not him again.
Oh,
but you know what, Lee?
Put your fries like going down, it's poor.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I get lots of people asking to be case studies for students and things like that. And, you know, and I've done loads of them in the past. But,
So, no, there's a time, even just to kind of connect it back to here, with the Martin Taylor Eduardo injury.
Yeah.
So were people, the press then coming to you, go, can we get, have you got some words for Eduardo?
Yeah.
So were you then becoming like a motivational?
I had to be careful. So I had it the other way. They were coming to me going, I was saying, well, you just got to be careful here because every single person that has a leg break or a horrific leg break, you'll automatically assume coming to mine and going, oh, that's the same as it is. Now, from the player's point of view, I couldn't play again through it. So whether they're listening or not, yeah. it's the whole message. So anyone who used to come on, so I do remember doing Martin Taylor one. Whenever they come on to me, I go, look, first and foremost, if it stayed within the leg, so it hasn't broke the skin or anything,
yeah,
it should be okay, and they should be able to, and it'll be back playing in, I don't know, 3-6 months, whatever it is, because if it doesn't, you've got no complications. So that's the first thing I'd always say to
with the player in mind.
For the player in mind, because that's what he's going to see or hear, and you know, and all that pictures.
So my Harris and resilient as you.
Yeah. So I always wanted to make sure they knew straight away, look, mine, you know, I've played against you guys now, so you've been telling me. But, you know, I can still
remember you, man, you and Bruce.
Was it true?
Yeah.
Was it true that their pit players had to have counselling and Man United were in constant contact with you after, and Sir Alex is quoted to have been from on the
other side? I don't know about the counselling. It was just coming into it then. Bobby Gould brought a sports psychologist into it, but you never, for me personally, I was like, you know, there's a trust thing, and it wasn't that the guy was great. Well, thinking of, you know, what are you telling the gaffer if I say, oh yeah, well, you know, mental health and well-being isn't like it is now.
No,
you know, where it's accepted within the thing.
He's having a flag with the gaffer after, right? So I'll just tell him everything.
Yeah,
I just told.
No, you know, he don't want to play this week. He's got so going on. So yeah, a little bit, because we didn't know. It's the unknown.
Blokes were a bit bloke. Yeah, they're not, you know, but it was a bloke
thing. We just had the thing, but he's not get. He won't want to pick me if I'm not saying I'm in the light trail of my mind or anything. You know, and that's what it is. But it's
and I dare say we've had footballers on the past that are just like, even if they've got a niggle or whatever, you're just like, because like you said there,
that's why
Andy Pitt sliding doors. Yeah, it's like, yeah, of course I'm fit.
John McCarthy, who obviously infamously broke his leg 3 times in 4 years, he said the same thing. He came back, played, probably shouldn't have, but didn't want to be seen to. And then he says, it's hindsight, I wish I hadn't. I wish I'd took the time, but. That was just the culture, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, but I think just going back to the, you're talking about the picture being out there and things like that. I used it in a positive way. You know, it's about going into, I don't do as much now because obviously the time span has been, I think I've been doing this job 30 odd years now.
Yeah.
But you turn it around. So if I go into a school or something, we talk about resilience. We're talking about don't just plan. You might want to be academic. You might want to be a musician or things like that. Where's your plan B? How are you going to get there? You can enjoy different eras. Think of a different way. Just you never know what's going to happen. So I use it that, you know, I went into coaching. I'd had working background before, insurance and stuff like that. And I could have gone back to that. But once you're in that football environment, you don't appreciate what that's like. So I naturally went into coaching, and then community stuff sort of followed afterwards, and so you just branch off into different things, different opportunities.
Yeah, and a positive thing we've seen, like kind of doing your notes and stuff, and at the end you've had two really good careers. Do you know what I mean? So the positive things come out of it is you've made it as professional football, also as a professional after football. So that's motivating for people who have not made it, or injuries set them back.
It would have been quite easy to sink into one, wouldn't it? And then you become a shadow of your former self, but you took it, you turned it into, like you're saying, being able to take a positive message and help people.
I think you look at the influences around you. It's about your family, your support mechanisms, your partners. Because I'm not saying I've never had dark days, as they call them, but you certainly, you know, I remember a couple of times where I'm just going, you know, why me? And then after an hour or so, just get on with it. It's this happens. This is the next chapter. What we're going to do next? Let's get this enjoyment. I always knew football was going to be a short spell for me because of the age I was going in. And my plan was spend 5 years at the top, work my way down the leagues, back into non-league football. And that's realistically, that's what would have happened.
So do you think it would have been more impactful to you as a player if you'd come through, you were an academy kid, this is all you knew?
Yeah, I think that's, I've seen that. I've seen those players coming through, not necessarily not making it through injury, but just not getting a contract, you know. And again, it's changed though. We're trying to put things in, but we're not going to change it an awful lot because it's still that rejection. It's still the disappointment. You're not going to repair that. It's how we prepare them to make sure they've got those qualifications. I'm not saying qualifications of everything, but the life skills, the how where you communicate. all the YTs, they, you know, they do their coaching badges, the level two UEFA C license, though it is. That's, you know, doesn't mean you have to go into football, but it teaches you how we communicate with people, you know, a structure to something. And then you go and find your, like with any football thing, then go and do your way, put your spin on. So that it's not brilliant, but how can it be any different? Because ultimately, you can only tape so many players. There have to be whatever they're looking for at the time. There's not going to be rejection. There's going to be success. There's going to be a huge disappointment. You know, when,
especially in that, because I feel like football has got massive.
Yeah, the net spread wider, hasn't it, with the internet and
everything. Compared to the 90s, yeah, no. Kids who want to get into football.
It's not a skate with a little stubby fag and a little pad in it, though, is it?
It's, you know, and it's family's expectations. You know, you sort of see my grandson plays for our player development centres, and, you know, he enjoys his football. Always say to him, just enjoy your football. He's not the best player. He's not the worst. He goes and enjoy it. They'll smile on your face. That's what you want. But too often you can see those parents have seen the pound notes at the end of it, and they're, come on, sorry, come on. It's like they're walking around with, you know, family advisors, aren't they? You know, and, you know, could naturally, if you're in that business, the scouts will go and see the players that, you know, you can see them all, they're all queuing up and waiting, and it's,
well, it's like with the academies, isn't it? So originally it was, they've took my lad, but now there's all these kind of branch offs where you pay to have your kid affiliated, isn't it? I know Coventry's massive, Coventry's rich, massive, isn't it, as a club, across boys and girls. My daughter played for a bit, and the amount of Coventry teams that they played, brilliant.
Yeah. We've got, it's just part of ours, we have a pathway from, and it's a grassroots pathway, so whereas, you know, next year we've taken more girls' teams into us. We'll have 55 grassroots teams. We put them into a level within that setup, and our top level, or our top team, was, you know, some of the age groups, we've got 14. Now, they'll play our equivalent to our academy teams once or twice a year to see, as a benchmark, to see, oh, actually, we could have that person in for 6 weeks. But you have then got a lot of other people that are offering this, you know, and quite expensive. Parents paying it. And I'm not saying it's not, because if you want good coaches, you might as well go and get the ones that are working at that level, because, you know, and then they can help and develop and things like that. But I just think it's a bit of a, you know, people are seeing that, thinking everyone's going to be the next, you know, Beckham, Ronaldo, Messi, whoever you, if you want to, but even, because it's, you know, it is, like, there is a hell of a lot of money in football at the moment, and has been for the last 10 years. Not so much when I was playing.
I was going to say, you were right at the, what would you, I mean, just a random question thrown out there, as an English central defender now, what would you do, kind of worth, do you know what I mean? It's like,
oh, I don't know. All I know is that Gordon Strachan, because Big Ron had left before it had got the sack, from Coventry, and Gordon Strachan took over. And I went in, and that was like at the end of the season when I was injured. And I went in to see Gordon, and because I was out of contract. And he started telling me that Spurs had come in for me and had offered 750,000, I think it was. I haven't heard anything about it, but he sort of told me, I went, oh, well, then that's all right. Because all I was trying to do was get an extra year.
Of course, yeah.
Well, I
bet you were like, oh, cheers,
man. Yeah. But they gave me that next year, because I would have been one of the first Bosnians you see as well. Yeah, because I'd cost nothing. I hadn't been assured by the football club.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole conversation came in with Gordon. So I don't know. I think they signed. It was the Wimbledon, Terry. It was a Wimbledon little guy played sweeper, and he went to Tottenham.
Chris Perrett.
I suppose. Yeah. Very quick. And, yeah. Couple, yeah. He went.
Oh, so that was just on dual spot.
Yeah. Yeah. What's this? I answer the question. I don't know. No.
But so a fullback that can play across all the way across the back nine, you're probably in the England squad, because that seems to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. How can I say? I should be there now.
Yeah. Yeah. Just before we move on from that, and the testimonial against Man United was obviously
Cantona's last game in England.
Yeah. It was crazy. We had our usual end of year survival. We played Spurs on the Saturday before. We had to wait away. I mean, that doesn't sound as daunting right now, does it? Yeah. Well, yeah, well, that was a given. You obviously won. Yeah. But back then, yeah, that was a big game. And we've beaten, I think, 2-1 or 3-1. Paul Williams, very good friend of mine, still is. He was great. I think he scored that game. But the Man United game was on the 16th of May. So the first thing Alex Ferguson had said when he came to see me in the hospital, he sat next to my mum. Mum didn't recognise him, didn't know who he was, just talking away, not in about football. And then Dad came in and was like, what are you doing? What's the right? He wasn't Sir then, but you know, just in awe of this guy, and my mum's, you know, rabbiting on about the food, lots of lorats. But the one thing he always said to them was, no matter what happens, we'll bring a team down. But, you know, obviously hoping it was going to come through, but he just said, look, whatever you want. He didn't say we'll bring a team down. He said, whatever you want, get us know. And he gave a number for my dad. I think it's one of his secretaries. And then we, obviously, it went on from there. So, testimonials never turn up. People pay on the day, aren't they? Yes. As soon as we beat Tottenham on the Saturday, I got a phone call on the Monday. He said they'll be queuing up at Highfield Road. Well, queuing up? What do you mean queuing up? It's all all the way around the stadium and around the streets and things like that. And they were queuing up for tickets to the testimonial match. We'd sold out on the Wednesday before the date, which was unheard of. So we'd sold 22,000, I think, Highfield Road held 22,500 seats. They'd sold everything. And then that was the first time a testimonial had ever been a sellout. And it absolutely hammered it down on the night. But it was just brilliant. That's why I've got such a close affinity with the people from Coventry. And, you know, my bio's adopted the Sky Blues fan because there was that. Naturally, you think the amount of support letters I got from people all over the world, and all the English clubs and professional footballers from everywhere, but Coventry was really, you know, Lee just connected with them, and I think it's probably why I still do the job they do now. I've got that connect, you know, with them, because I didn't play a lot of games for Coventry. If you think about it, I think it was 50-55, and that. So, but I just think the way I played, the way my career's took me afterwards, and it's and now we've just enjoyed a bit of success with that. But yeah, so that night, Cantona, my uncle Clive, it got in to the dressing room afterwards. Didn't know too much about football, Bill of Fat. He went to the kit man and said, "Oh, is there anything you can give us for auction, a raffle, or something like that?" And it took him this shirt, and then he called back and he didn't know what he's holding and didn't know the significance of it then, because obviously we knew it was his last game, because he played against West Ham when the season finished, and then he comes in to have this shirt, and he wore three shirts in the game. So one went into their museum, one had come to us. I've still got it, but you know, my dad was there.
Your uncle never even knew what it was.
We're not all true now. We're all growing good. Oh, cheers.
That's all they give us.
Yeah. There's no names. They didn't have the names on the... Because he had three. It didn't have cancer.
Yeah.
So before, at that time as well, then, obviously that was pre-internet. So were you just mile-wise? Were you inundated with like mile?
Yeah. Letters? So there was four. I think we had... My dad was brilliant, and he replied to every single one. Everyone that had an address on, he replied back and put... a French graph that I'd signed, and he replied to every single one. But we had about 4,000 letters. There was, I think it was around that time, Take That had split up, or just afterwards. So I think I'd sort of started getting more fan mail.
There's a petition to get you in. Yeah. Stole Take That's
yeah,
number.
Yeah. I should have remembered that.
That's so nice, isn't it?
Yeah. But you learn a little.
So romantic. Yeah,
still as much as a key. Keep and you know, just every now and again, you just the way people have just gone out their way to, you know, just wish me all the best indeed on it.
Well, Wingy said it on here, it's about the Cov fans that there, and even in the Premiership, it was probably be a bit young for night when they come up, but they were like a second team to the outside, particularly the Midlands side, wanting the Midlands to do well because we weren't great, because we were crap,
but we were our third division, I think. And seeing them, and like you say, just being on the precipice all the time, you had like a bit of a go on, like towards them, like you
said, underdogs,
yeah, like William Quinn, and like and yourself, and players like that who are good, honest players, I think, and you kind of can see that.
I think there's no like, I mean, there's an unhealthy rivalry with Leicester, which will just carry on for years. But you'd look at, you know, and they seem to don't like the Villa.
That's one point.
And they've got a bit of an
affinity. Use our stadium for it.
Yeah.
We lost money on that as well, apparently.
So there's a good affinity between Coventry and Blues for that. I mean, you know, winning the, see, that was the COVID. Yes. Yeah, I used to love coming down here because obviously we moved every. I didn't see just how is it. Yeah, we were here for full season. Yeah. We're here that the year we won it, wasn't it? Because Toby came into it. You might have remarked. Yeah. So, but I think you answer the question. There's sort of, you know, there's nothing south of Tom Drees and, you know, Northampton. Is not, you know, they've never been up there as well. So the you can see why they're one of them little teams that
Cromreach, Arno Hill, something. Yeah.
So
in your role now, last year, Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, from the PFA. That was a bit of a shock. And it was good because it was presented by a guy called Dave Palmer, who's retired now from the PFA. And he'd had a bit of a career, not a massive football career, but gone into work with PFA and has helped a lot of professional footballers outside of the game that you weren't even here with upside. So it was nice that he presented that award to me, and it was great. So we got to go to the PFA Awards in Manchester as well, and that was a great night. I must say, you know, Mo Salah was there picking up his award, and Van Dijk, you know, he's seen there, and you're just in the opera house. It was that. So yeah, it was to be recognised by your sort of peers for that. And I'd, you know, always tend to forget about anniversaries and stuff on that. So not. And then 92, I was a player. So when they go Lifetime Achievement Award, it's sort of, and I'm still doing the job. Normally it's, so, well, that's it, you're finished now. There's your, let's see, later. Like, I'm thinking, yeah, one step. Yeah, thanks, sir. You got your award. You know, the youngsters are coming in. But no, I mean.
P45 was the envelope. Oh.
I'm not old enough for Lifetime Achievement.
Yeah. But the PFA, I mean, I know they had the, you know, people question what they're there for and what they do, especially in the money that's in football and stuff like that. But you won't hear about all the stuff they do with all the players that are out of contract or haven't got a contract, or have had injuries or things like that. And they're a great support mechanism of mine at the time of my injury. And even with the job that I'm doing, they set up the pilot for what all the foundations are now. Football clubs, they do be six clubs. In the northeast, and they funded that, and it was initially set up for ex players to go back into the game, go back into coaching, and look for another career or a stepping stone into whatever you do. That was the thing. It's now grown into, you know, a huge sort of a community charity now, where, you know, we're talking about affecting, you know, health and well-being. You've got education, employability, all using the badge of the football clubs to be that connect, because, you know, you've got a, you know, you look at mental health and well-being and males not wanting to talk to the doctors and stuff like that and go in and open up. Well, you've got, what is this hold now? 27,000. That's your order. If you can be in and around them on a match day and somebody comes and talks to you about prostate cancer or where to get a test, or, you know, it's just that badge opens people up. Yeah. And we sort of get places where we're the, sort of, you know, NHS find it hard to get into, because people, blokes particularly, don't want to talk about things. And I think that's where our roles change. Football's still a big part of it, and I'm still for those, you know, fitness sessions and walking football and all that. But that generates a conversation. And then football clubs now, the charities can go, like, we've got this pathway for you. How have you done this? We've got that advice, the expertise. We don't just employ football coaches. Yeah, so that's where I've seen it grow over sort of 30 years. Well, 30 years next year it will be. From the 97, I started doing it just after the testimonial. So, but yeah, I just still be doing it. And now, and so the Premier League Foundation They came into that their 15-year anniversary. So even though I've been doing the job for 30-odd years, it became a charity in 2008. And then the Premier League Foundation, where they started putting some money into community clubs and doing a massive way. So we just got into one of the Premier League.
I was going to ask you, do you find that then?
That changes. Just a lot more opportunities and
starting charities. Yeah.
So, it's great now. I mean, I'm 59 this month. And to finally get, be part of that. And I was up at the Premier League last week for some
arc, that is, isn't it? From you haven't got a grind, you don't know where you're going to play, and now all of a sudden you're back in the Premier League.
Yeah. And it's, the owner at ground as well, which is thanks to Doug. He's done a great job. And he's connected, when the club would be brilliant. They gave me, at the end of the season, I was invited to go on to one of the buses when we're going mad, and to be part of that, going through all the streets and seeing all the amount of people that were just coming. I mean, God knows how many people were there, but in the Memorial Park afterwards, just see, it was so proud. But we had like a month celebrating because we'd done it quite, even though I was nervous all the way through.
Yeah.
We did it quite.
Weren't quite a foregone, but it wasn't far out, was it?
It was always like, if we win today, and I remember that drawing with Hull on Bank Holiday Monday, and that sort of like, now someone else has got to go and win 8 games.
Yeah.
And we've just got to win 3.
It's, no one seemed to want that sentence of ice to buy.
I thought Ipswich would have been a lot bigger contender for us, but it just
sounded really pushed, yeah.
Yeah. And to be spilled, so the community side of it is that it's a much, much bigger than that. The thing for me, the football on SAP is obviously there, but it's the impacts we can make off the pitch, which is especially for people who, might need a little bit of direction. With young people, or when it's just someone, we run a dementia active program. We all run all the, the Bruce Foundation, we all run very similar programs, but it's that wider thing. So if you've got somebody suffering from dementia who's coming on a walking football dementia group, they get to be with people in a safe environment. You've got their loved ones, partners, wives, husbands, who then have a little bit of relief, go grab a coffee, or they can just stand and have a break, talk to other people about what they're going through. It's such, that's committed, that, isn't it? You've got primary, secondary effects of everything, call it, keep hearing these days, the ripple effect, and you see that.
Yeah.
That's all.
That's brilliant. So we can't go with Vaxane. He's still playing a bit of football. Birmingham Former Players Association.
Yes.
Gluten for punishment. You're starting to feel it. You're still fit as ever. Again, I've played against you for the charity, and you can still do a bit, can't you, mate? He's like a 59 this month.
59, yeah, in the dude. So most of the defenders, so Dean Hall for me is 63. He's our left back. Roger Johnson.
Did just come in here, and I
love Roger to be it, but he's high. We're playing a charity match. We're 6-0 up. Roger, let's just, let the left give a penalty. Don't you effing dare. We know. Let them through. I ain't letting nobody give the rear. We do. And you love the desire. We played the military vets at Vedich a couple of weeks. And they were the bad side, to be fair. Yeah. But on that day, when they being the legs in, I call it, we had.
So was that Duke playing as well?
Yeah. So Luke has played a couple of times now, and he's just a different class. Deb came on for a bit, but he's had a few hip injuries and stuff like that. But Lee Carsley, guards was the win. Usually we had Dan Carter in there.
Yeah. Spotting
Painter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I see this.
Oh, that team be worth in today's
market. Yeah. I still get awestruck watching you guys, and it's like brilliant.
It's all about getting together and having afterwards. That's what it brings us together. I mean, Tom, Tom. It's that banter before. If ever you wanted to come do this in the train, get skipped there.
Yeah.
And get that, because you could just, that's like prime TV.
Put it out, it's 9 o'clock, don't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mike O'Connor and Tom. It's just class. But yeah, still playing for Leamington Vets. I think someone told me a stat the other week that even though the injury I'd had in the Premier League, I'm the only player from that era of when it started, 92, 93, to still be playing now. Okay. And that puts it into a bit of context.
Yeah. Did it take a while to, I know we're about to wrap up, but did it take a while to, did you feel you ran differently? Did your body feel different?
Yeah.
Or even now, do you find, is the movement and everything, is it different?
It's actually, because I was left with a dropped foot because of the tissues that had to be, the tendons that had to be cut away. So I had my big toe one pulled really tight, so it holds it there and I can push out a bit, but I can't pull it up at all. So actually running is easier to do than walking because you naturally bring your knee up, plant, knee. Yeah. I had to learn to walk in a different way because I still do now. I just randomly just sort of look like I'm tripping, but it's just because I can't pull my toe right up, you know, if I'm having a better drink. So you'll trip over the smallest pebble, right? Yeah. It's like that sometimes, but it's, so running's easier. So, I think that drive just wanting to play football, enjoying, get out, and I'll carry on playing for as long as I can. I do feel it now that, I mean, that game at Red Oaks the other week, it's like, you know, I mean, we knee and we back and so enough, but it's a crack with the lads, and that will never change.
And it's cliche that you epitomise it. You've got the brain of a footballer, so you don't have to. It's all right, and I don't have to do that.
You just can't cope with legs. We played one at I think it was from Mark Crisp at Bromsgrove, and they had the centre forward that was playing. I'd signed him at Solihull Borough when I was manager of them, and I was thinking, you know, there's 25 years difference here, and they're playing balls, you know, down the side of me. So anyone who's got any sense knows that. So just put that pull down the side.
Just got hold of him. Yeah. No, you don't. Yeah.
And Roger still wants to press and do a high line and push us up. Yeah. You know, and we're lying thinking there's a 60-year-old coming up and a 63-year-old. We don't want to go up that way. We want to.
Roger's like, you're playing a high line.
Yeah.
Come on, the line.
Next thing, Ty, you'll see him. He'll be on the right wing. And he got Pank.
In front.
Pank played the last one. He was he wasn't overlapping enough, so he went right. Paint, you come inside, play alongside me, and he went like right wing back. Didn't see him for the rest of the game. It was great.
Love him, man. Yeah. I absolutely love him.
I love his drive. Yeah. I love his drive.
Just a bit quick. I know it's not on there. Just a bit quick fire then. All I like to do. Hardest opponent.
Ian Wright.
Yeah. Go favorite away ground. We're just making up on the spot.
Blackburn.
It was park.
Pitch was beautiful. Yeah. But yeah. Not the stadium around it, but the pitch was perfect.
Favourite players to play with?
Dion Dubby. Paul Williams. Dion brought class to our... When he could... Again, non-league lad. What he'd learned at Man United, I'm not saying... Nowhere else was doing it, but he still wanted all the lads to be, you know, going out, socialising, you know, partners as well, but having times. But he bore that sort of, elegance. He wanted us to be like him. What he bought, and because he'd been at Old Trafford.
Best practice. He could slot in a centre on what's left, isn't
it? Yeah.
You know from seeing him then and seeing his potential, did you ever think that he would become... an established Holmes under the hammer presenter.
But he's doing it in the stadiums now, isn't he? I saw a clip on the summit the other day and he was going around, just come with me now. Here we are, built in 19. I think it might have been the Aztec, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's...
Did you ever have him down? Did you ever mark him as a future TV presenter?
I didn't know.
Eight on TV. Just,
I can't be too... No, he's up to be brilliant. But yeah, it's like... Match of the day, yeah. Football, but you know, go around.
Very bad to be,
yeah. Yeah.
The staircase is going to have to come out. Yeah, asbestos received from the asbestos register.
Yeah.
So, just finally, then, what advice would you give to a young Brummie footballer trying to get through the non-league routes? And just touching upon what you said about kind of your experience about gaining other aspects.
I think it's knowing your level of where you are, having that drive and ambition to want to push on, having good people around you who can make those decisions which are a good for you. And it's about you understanding and not thinking, I'm not good enough to go there. it's, as I said, mine came sort of naturally. I always ended up going to the reserve team of wherever I moved up a level. And you know, it's that attitude, application and whereabout. If you've got a talent, that will see you through anyway. But without those other three things, you might as well forget the talent, you know. And belief, to let people, I had so many people tell me that, you know, you're not good at it, you never make it, you shouldn't have made it.
You shouldn't have made it.
Right. You just get people around like that thing is, oh, you know, they'll go, oh, remember, you know, once when I've had a bad game and they're going, oh, see, that's why you shouldn't play.
But you just, some of those things that go, no offense.
Yeah.
That's nice of it. No offense.
But remember, you know, you
should never have been a professional footballer.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been quite lucky.
No offense.
Yeah. Hard work trainer. Lucky I'll be king. Yeah. Belief.
Wicked. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Nah, cheers.
Thanks,
guys.
Nah, cheers.